Hopefully the mic will work. We're back on live, back on the air. We went a few weeks there without it, and so now we've got all that going. Our children would like they're dismissed to children's church. It is spring. Spring is, I feel like saying spring is my favorite time of year. But I've said that about fall also. And I've said that about winter, and I even say that about summer. But I do love the springtime. When you look around and you see everything sprouting and everything growing and everything coming alive. Now, we went driving yesterday afternoon for a little while and went by a herd of cattle, and there were some baby calves hopping around and what have you. And this morning, I saw a herd of sheep this morning. I didn't know there were sheep around here, but coming through the back way, going over to pick up my grandson Braden, I drove by a shepherd with some sheep out in a back road there, and there were some little baby lambs jumping around and acting like baby lambs act. They were just cute as they could be. I love spring. Spring is about life. Spring is about life beginning new and beginning over and starting. And so I want us to celebrate that this morning, and I want us to look a little deeper in it. Hosea chapter 10, verse 12. Hosea says, "Sow to yourselves in righteousness, reap in mercy, break up your fallow ground, for it is time to seek the Lord till he come and rain righteousness upon you." You know, life that spring is all about, life is the greatest gift that God gives human beings, is the gift of life. There is nothing else like it. And only God is able to give life. You know, our scientists have done miraculous things now, and they're able to see things on a very small level up to a very macro level. In fact, I am amazed continually at the things that they're able to do now with technology that has never been done before. Sometimes it's a little frightening. I was telling a couple this morning that I saw an ad on TV. Now there's a new app out. And you can get that on your phone and put it beside you when you go to sleep. And the next morning it will tell you all about your sleep cycle. Did you go into REM sleep? Did you not sleep well? Did you roll over? How many times you turned over? Did you have sleep apnea? How's your heart rate, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I think a lot of that I would rather be happily ignorant and not know what happened during the night. I wake up the next morning feeling better, and so I don't want to worry about what happened then. Science is indeed able to do a great many things today that we have not ever been done before. But I'll tell you what they cannot do and will not ever be able to do, and that is create life. It's just not something that human beings are going to be able to do. That is the purview of God. He is able to give life, and he is able to create life. And he does so every year it springs back new. In the wintertime, we see the trees and things, and everything looks dead and brown and beaten down. And now this time of year, the green leaves start sprouting, and everything is looking new, and it is a very exciting time. I assure you, farmers are sitting on the edge of their seat, ready to go. Having grown up on the farm and having farmed commercially myself for a short period of time, I know that when you get to this time of year and it is almost time to start planting, you start getting really nervous and you're ready to go and let's go, let's go, let's go. And you're afraid to go too early. There might be that last freeze, or maybe the crop's going to come off in the middle of the dry summer, et cetera, et cetera. Timing gets to be important, but I promise you, farmers are waiting and are ready to go. And you know why they farm? Farmers don't farm to produce a crop. They don't farm to make money. They farm, the real farmers farm, because deep in their soul, they love farming. That's just inside them. I heard a story one time of a wealthy man driving down the road, and he saw two farmers out working in the field, and he stopped to talk to them, and he said, "What if I gave each of you $1 million? What would you do?" One of them said, "Well, I'd travel the world. I'd go to France. I'd go to Germany. I'd go to England. I'd go all over the world. I'd see it all." He said, "Okay." He said, "Dylan, what would you do?" He said, "I'd just farm till it's all gone." If you're a farmer, you get that, right? You just farm till the money's gone. Not to make money, because deep inside you, you love farming. Farming is important, and it's rewarding. Nothing like seeing crops come up and grow and do the things they ought to do. Well, in the same way, as Christians, we're farmers. We are farming. We plant seeds spiritually. We tend to them, and God gives us the increase, and we get to see things happen, and it's exciting. And I'm going to tell you, true Christians witness and minister and farm spiritually, because in the core of their soul, they love farming for God. They love going out and planting God's seed and seeing the increase occur. Although most of us are not engaged in commercial farming, we all understand what it means to grow flowers or something in your backyard. If you don't, you know, farm thousands of acres, if you're not trying to raise a crop that you're going to live on, at least, most of us at least, grow something in our backyard. Maybe it's flowers, maybe it's a garden, whatever, but we grow something. And the process is the same. Whether you're farming thousands of acres or whether you're growing a vegetable garden in your backyard, it is the same process. Now, granted, they do it on a much larger scale with much, much more expensive equipment, et cetera, et cetera. But it's the same thing. You have certain things that you have to do if you're going to be successful. And spiritually, it is the same. Whether we are a small group, a small church such as ourselves, or whether it is a mega church or one of the ministries that reaches people around the world, the process of farming for God or farming for your garden is the same whether it is small or whether it is large. And so one of the things I want us to do is look at what is really, really involved in farming. First of all, there are some basic steps that we must take. And Jesus alluded to these, to what happens in Mark 4, chapters, verses 3 through 8. He says, "Hearken, behold, there went out a sower to sow. And it came to pass, as he sowed, some fell by the wayside. The fowls of the air came and devoured it up. Some fell on stony ground, where it had not much earth. And immediately it sprang up, but because it had no depth of earth. But when the sun was up, it was scorched, and because it had no root, it withered away. And some fell among thorns, and the thorns grew up and choked it out, and it yielded no fruit. And other fell on good ground and did yield fruit, that sprang up and increased and brought forth some 30, some 40, some 60, and some 100-fold. I am reminded of a sign that was in the shop when I was going to high school decades ago. There was a sign that hung up back there, and it said very simply, I've modified it a little bit. The sign said, if you do what you've always done, you'll get what you always get. Have you ever seen that? Probably not. It's a, if you do what you've always done, you're going to get what you've always gotten. A lot of people see that almost as a curse. But let's change it just a little bit. Let's say it this way. If you do what you're supposed to do, you will get what you're supposed to get. Now think about that. If you and I do what we're supposed to do, we will get what we are supposed to get. That turns things. You know, a lot of us live our lives just saying, I hope God blesses us. I hope we have good luck. I hope good fortune smiles on us. It's all a random kind of thing. But if you look at it in this way, if we do what we are supposed to do, we will get what we are supposed to get. That puts the onus on us. That puts the burden of seeing a happy outcome fall directly on us, and we know it to be true. One of my pet peeves is when I hear someone say, well, I've just been less fortunate than a lot of other people. You know, I see people who have money and who have a good living and who have this and that, and I say, they've just been more fortunate than I have. And obviously, there are some people who are fortunate. But probably that's not the reason for your problem. Becky and I were first married. I hesitated whether to tell you all this, but I will. When Becky and I were first married, I went to school days, and I worked in a chicken plant at night. I went to school days, and I worked in a nuclear plant at night. Becky went to school days, and she did a lot of undesirable jobs in the evening or at night. So when I hear someone say, well, you've got a good education, you've just been really fortunate. No, they weren't there the nights I was working in the chicken plant hanging live chickens, right? It wasn't good fortune. It was hard work. And I'm not saying that boastingly. Life is that way. If you sit on your behind and you do nothing, someday you're going to look around and say, why don't I have anything? Get up and get to work. Church is that way. Spiritual life is that way. If you want to be a blessed Christian that is reaping the blessings and the benefits and the grace of Almighty God, get up and do the things necessary. Be obedient. If you will listen and if you will be obedient and if you will work, God will bless you. God doesn't just bless some people and not others. He blesses everyone who is willing to do their part. And no, I don't believe in prosperity theology. I'm not going to say that if you come to church and pay your tithe and do the things that are right, God's going to make you a millionaire. He may not. You may live your entire life poor. You may be as broke as you can be. But spiritually, you will be wealthy. It happens. If you serve God, He will reward you. If you do the things you ought to do, you will get the things you ought to get. And that is a promise. That is a wonderful thing to know. All right, so let's talk about the steps of farming, spiritually, in our personal lives. The first thing you have to do is prepare the seed bed. We could go out here and take the best seed in the world and sow it in the middle of Highway 82, and we would not reap a crop off of it. I'm sorry, it just wouldn't happen. If the birds didn't eat it up, the trucks run over it, and whatever, it'd get destroyed. There would be nothing come of it. If we go out here on this parking lot that's pavement and hard rock and sow seed, we're not going to get anything. If you want to be successful as a Christian, you have to prepare that seed bed. You have to prepare the place for that seed to fall. And it is the same in church as it is in farming. I remember in farming, and I was one of them, regret to say, there are people who want to take shortcuts. You know, I'll plow this field up and disc it once or twice. That's good. I'm tired. It's the weekend. I don't go over this thing again. It's enough. And then when the crop is sown and it doesn't come up very well, they don't understand what happened. You have to prepare that seed bed deep and well. Break up the fallow ground. Break up the old ground in your life, in your heart, and whatever's going on that has been compacted and that has been laying fallow, that has had nothing to do with it, get it in good shape and ready for seed. The time you spend talking to and working with lost people is never lost. It's a part of preparing that seed bed. You know, sometimes we don't know it. Sometimes when things are happening in our lives, we're not aware of what all is going on. But God is preparing us. And if we allow Him to, He will prepare our lives for His will. He may take things away from us. He may know there are things that we don't need, but He knows better than we do, and He prepares what we are and what we need. And when we go out and we talk to someone and we ask them to come to church or we witness to them, and maybe we don't get any result, don't feel like you've been a failure. Whatever you do in that regard, God will bless it. It's all a part of preparing that seed bed. Number two, sow good seed. No farmer in his right mind would spend days of labor and all the expense involved to prepare a really high quality seed bed and then sow a mixture of wheat and Johnson grass or corn and cuckleburrs. You just wouldn't do that, right? You spend a lot of time making sure that the seed that you're sowing is of the highest quality. We used to buy certified seed, and it would be treated, and it would be sifted, and there were lots of things done to it to make sure there were not a lot of weeds in it, to make sure that it had a good fertility rate. Some of the seed companies would guarantee like a 95% fertility rate, that much of the plant would come up. I don't know how you would measure that, never did know, but it's enough to say farmers who are successful spend a lot of time making sure that the seed they're sowing are the seed they're supposed to be sowing. It is no different in God's house. When we are dealing with people, the seed we're sowing to them is important. If you go out and you invite someone to church and you tell them, you know, come on, we'll love it, and you try to witness to them, talk to them about Jesus, and at the same time they see you doing things that are patently wrong, they see you involved in sin that you know you should not be involved in, you're sowing both kinds of seed. You're sowing good seed and you're sowing weeds at the same time, and you're not going to reap the crop that you want to reap. Sow good seed. Make sure that what we say and what we do is done correctly. And then once the plants come up, we have to cultivate them. One of the greatest feelings, I think, about farming is that after about a week, 10 days maybe, you go out to the field after you've done all this work, getting everything ready, you've planted it, et cetera, you go out and you start seeing these little green shoots come through the soil. It starts popping up. And you know, that's what it's about. That's what I'm doing. The plants are beginning to grow. It's going to work. It's going to happen. You're always a little bit afraid that you're going to go out and nothing come up, right? But it does. And you see these things sprout. You have to cultivate them. If you don't, bad things happen. The ground gets packed around them. It gets really hard for them to grow. They can't get sunlight. They can't get moisture. They can't get air into the soil. They don't grow, and they are stunted, and many of them die. So as a farmer, you have to go through and cultivate them. Such is the same with Christians. When we have people who began a journey with Christ, it's not over. When someone comes to this altar and they get on their knees and they give their lives to Jesus, or whether they do it at home or wherever else, that is a beginning. That's certainly not the end. And it isn't a matter of just say these words and you're saved and now go on and do whatever you want to do. Being a Christian requires a lot of cultivation. We have to protect young converts. We have to make sure that they get what they need, that they get the teaching, that they get the understanding, that they get the training they need. We must protect them. Amazingly, for a lot of people who become Christians, the first obstacle they're going to have to overcome is other Christians. We seem to want to talk down to them. We want to be judgmental. Don't do that. They're learning. Let them learn. Let them experience and let them make mistakes and help them to get up and help them to find the right way. I remember when I first started in ministry, when I had first surrendered to preach, my first sermon, I'll never forget, August 15th, 1976, I got in the pulpit. Man, I'd prepared for days. I was ready to go. Maybe 10 minutes. I don't know. It wasn't much. It was pretty short. But it was a lot to me. And a woman I had known all my life got to talking to me about doctrine and about what she believed and what she thought I ought to believe. And I disagreed. And I said, well, I see it this way and whatever. And I'll never forget what she said. She said, well, as long as you believe what you do out of ignorance, I guess you'll be okay. That's like the most degrading, humiliating thing anyone could say to a new Christian. Don't do that. Lift people up. You are never going to argue someone into changing their beliefs. I've seen people try it over and over and over again, and I have till yet to ever see somebody after a theological argument say, you know what, you were right and I was wrong. I'm going to change my whole way of thinking. It's not going to happen. What we can do, though, is we can love them and we can wrap our arms around them and we can be supportive. Call sin, sin. I'm not saying by any means not do that and say things that are not right are not right. But it does no good if a young Christian's in our church and we run them off because the lifestyle they've been involved in doesn't agree with what we think. We need to love them. We need to bring them in and let God change them, not us. Let God change them. Cultivate the new Christian. And then don't neglect the harvest. I have known of farmers who have raised spectacular crops, who have done all the right things, who have spent hours and fussed and worried over it, and then waited too long to actually go in and harvest. And a thunderstorm comes up or whatever happens, and the crop ends up laying on the ground and most of it is wasted. What I'm saying to you and I as Christians, we have to do all these things. We have to do all this work. But don't neglect to harvest. Spiritually, put your arm around somebody and ask them to come to Jesus. Harvest the fruit when the time is right. Encourage them. Let's watch them grow. But let's reap the harvest also. We must go the extra mile. When the time comes, approach people and talk to them about making a profession of faith. Well, there was another sign in the Ag building that I remember so well. It said simply, preparation and perspiration lead to position. Farming is hard work. It is the hardest work I've ever done in my life. It is long work. Starts before daylight of a morning and you don't finish till late at night. You worry about it continually. It stays on your mind, but it's worth it. Spreading the gospel of Jesus Christ, building a church is hard work. And if we are successful at Family of Faith Church, it won't be just because it miraculously happened by accident. It's going to be because we worked really hard at it, and we worried about it, and we committed ourselves, and we spent time, and we did all of the things that we had to do to make this church grow. I want to end today, if our musicians will come, by talking about the seed. The seed is the most precious thing we see, I think, physically dealing with life. You know, if you see a kernel of corn or wheat or whatever it may be, it appears to be an inanimate object. In fact, when you plant them, they're usually very dry. They appear to be dead. But inside that seed is the spark of life. No one can replicate it. As I said earlier, science can't create life. You can create all of the elements, all of the chemicals, and all of the things that are in a seed, but you can't make life spark. It is the same in church. We can't save people. We can't make life happen. But if we plant the seed, then God can do all of His right things, the moisture, the temperature, the time. He takes care of it, and that seed sprouts. And that sprout is life. That's what we're dealing with. That's what we're handling. If we do our part, there will be people who will have life that we would not have had it otherwise. That's important. This spring, as we go into the Spring into Action, Spring into Action program, let's get in there and work. And I mean work hard. Let's do whatever we've got to do. Bring people into God's house. When they're here, when they hear the gospel, that's planting the seed, and God then will give the increase, and life can spark from it. Please stand while we sing.